court will proceed to the fifth case, Gomez versus J. May. Oh, I guess it's Shomig. Gomez versus Shomig. Mr. Johnson.
Thank you and good morning. Doug Johnson on behalf of the petitioner appellant Ariel Gomez. I understand today I'm asking the court to utilize an exception that is very rarely used and only used in extraordinary cases, that being the actual innocence exception to the procedural default that was found by the district court. I think this case is extraordinary, not only because the district court stated that it was a manifest injustice that Mr. Gomez remains in prison, but also because of what the highest court that looked at the evidence in this case said. 8 months after Mr. Gomez's conviction was affirmed in the direct appeal of his co-defendant pursuant to a sufficiency of evidence argument, Mr. Dominguez argued that there was no evidence that Mr. Gomez had fired the fatal shot from the Pathfinder. Therefore, he could not be held accountable for Mr. Gomez's actions. The same judge that wrote the Gomez opinion reviewed that evidence and wrote the opinion and stated, in light of the total lack of supporting evidence, the circuit court erred in assuming that the fatal bullet must have come from the Pathfinder. And Mr. Dominguez's murder conviction was reversed because there was no evidence or a total lack of evidence against Mr. Gomez. Therefore, I don't believe that the principles that keep this court of the district court or this court of appeals from granting a writ of habeas, a petition for a writ of habeas corpus apply, because I don't believe the state of Illinois has an interest in keeping an individual incarcerated after a court has looked at the evidence against him and found a total lack of evidence to support his conviction and that incarceration. I also realize that in asking this court to apply the actual innocence standard, and I looked often for this court doing it, I didn't find one. The Dello Club case refers to two cases down in Arkansas, but I think this may be the case that actual innocence should be applied. I know I can't convince this court that all I have to show is a mere insufficiency of evidence, but if you look at, in this case, the new evidence we're offering, Mr. Gomez...
What is the evidence that was unavailable to your client at the time of trial?
Two pieces of evidence. Mr. Gomez's testimony and the evidence...
I don't see how his own testimony could be unavailable to him at trial.
In this case, the allegations of the petition are that he did not know he had a right to testify, and his counsel did not tell him he had a right to testify.
That's a different problem. I mean, that's the substantive problem, but I don't see how one could say the new evidence, which was earlier unavailable, is the contents of his own head.
I couldn't answer that question any different than I have, and then certainly agreeing with the district court on that part of it. He also was a 17-year-old with some mental problems that are in the record. He didn't know, as he sat there, that he had any right to come forward, and his attorney, the substantive claim or the claim on the merits is an ineffective assistance of counsel. And I believe that some courts have held that...
Is there any other new evidence that could not have been presented at trial, in your view, that shows actual innocence?
Yes, Your Honor, the statements of the four co-defendants, Mr.
Gakula. I gather that they were, in fact, actually presented at trial. Your client chose not to introduce them in his portion of the trial, but they're, again, contemporaneous. If I understand the actual innocence theory, it concerns new evidence that arises afterward that the person couldn't have been aware of at the time, and that excuses procedural default. I've never seen that doctrine applied to evidence that was either in the defendant's own head or that he was well aware of at the time of trial and chose not to use.
I believe that the Schluck case does not apply to the actual innocence standard, a requirement of due diligence. And also, I don't believe Mr. Gomez could have forced the four co-defendants to testify in his behalf, especially without the directed verdict for any of them being granted. And I also believe that there is no guarantee that the court would have admitted those statements for Mr. Gomez had his attorney asked that they do so, ask the court to do so. The government is arguing, well, one of the other attorneys did indeed, Mr. Dominguez, ask that portions of Mr. Gomez's testimony be admitted in his case, and after long and involved arguments, somewhat involved, that was allowed, but I don't believe there's a guarantee that those statements could have come in from Mr. Gomez.
There's almost never any guarantee of anything in this world, but as you may have heard me say in connection with an earlier case, the way to find out is to offer the evidence and see what the judge does. You don't just fail to offer the evidence and then some years later predict that had it been offered, it wouldn't have been admitted.
I understand that point in general, Your Honor, but here again, all these things were kept out because of the ineffective assistance of his counsel. Schlupp allows us to look at a broad array of evidence, and there is no, a state court has already said there is no evidence. The most recent court, may I say, there's no evidence against this man, yet he remains incarcerated. So then how far of a leap do we have to make from what we know is an insufficiency to this actual innocence case exception? And I think here, where you have basically a bunch of kids, in order to suggest that this man was indeed guilty, you have a 14-year-old, a couple 15-year-olds, and a 16-year-old masterminding a cover-up about this gun and being able to keep it from experienced interrogators and saying and hiding that fact that Mr. Gomez disposed of the gun. I submit they would not and could not have held this information from law enforcement. And I know that to try to address the concern, I know that adding Mr. Gomez's testimony, in most cases, this is two bites at the apple, and how in the world can we respect a man who wants to come forward and say, well, I didn't testify and that didn't work, so let's give it a shot. But the reason it's different here is because his statement is, for the most part, true and correct. But his statement, there is no way to reasonably believe the key portion of that statement, and that is, quote, no one on the street had any guns or weapons. There is no way Mr. Gomez could have known that. This is 11:30 at night after a Bulls victory in a riot situation. I think we have to be able to establish, that has to be believed. How can Mr. Gomez, in this crowd, in a scene he's only at for a few seconds, be able to make that statement and have it be true? Far more is what was alleged in the petition. Far more likely to be true is the statement, I didn't see anyone with any guns or weapons. But in light of all the other evidence, this is what should have been done, and that would be the jump from a mere insufficiency to the actual innocence we have to establish here, in addition to the fact that if all these kids were able to hide the guilt or innocence, the crucial disposal of the gun issue from law enforcement, they would have said in their statements, everybody was shooting, everybody was firing their guns. But they didn't. In fact, Mr. Yovanovich and Mr. Dominguez again put in their statements, or agreed to what was written for them, no one had any guns. If they were trying to do anything but save themselves, that would not be there. There is no way to infer that Mr. Gomez fired the fatal shot, and he is actually innocent, and the rare exception should be applied in this case.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Ms. Kaplan?
May it please the Court. My name is Karen Kaplan on behalf of the Attorney General's Office. I represent the respondent warden in this case. The District Court properly found the petitioner failed to show a fundamental miscarriage of justice for him to excuse his procedurally defaulted ineffective assistance of counsel claim. Neither petitioner's proffered testimony nor his co-defendant's statement satisfy Schlupp's requirement of new reliable evidence of actual innocence. First of all, as this court has noted, the evidence is not new. The Eighth Circuit has found that an affidavit is not new if, as in Bannister versus Zelo, the contents of the affidavit were derived from the defendant himself, or if, as in Pickens versus Lockhart, It advances the factual basis of a claim that the petitioner knew at the time of trial. Further, petitioner proffers, in his brief, petitioner proffers his co-defendant's statements for what they did not say about the existence of a second gun. And here an argument he did as well. But silence on a given subject has, at least in my experience, never constituted evidence of actual, of new evidence of actual innocence. The co-defendant statements are also not evidence tenably claimed to have been wrongly excluded under Schlupp. As this court mentioned, the statements were excluded on defense motion and could have been introduced in whole or in part in the petitioner's trial had he elected to do so. Defense counsel argues that there's no guarantee that the court would have allowed those statements to come in, but there's no reason to believe that petitioner's request would have been treated any differently. The evidence is also not reliable. If petitioner testified that he didn't see whether anybody had a gun or somebody else could have shot the victim, he would have been impeached by his own statement, in which he said no one in the group on the street had any guns or weapons. His testimony also would have contradicted the testimony of the eyewitnesses who identified petitioner as the only shooter at the scene. Besides, if there really were another shooter or an exchange of gunfire where petitioner had to move or get out of the way, that would have been his defense early on, and not at this late stage of federal habeas review. And Schlupp allows this court to consider the timing of the submission in determining whether the evidence is reliable. The evidence also fails to show actual innocence. Petitioner argues that he's shown a fundamental miscarriage of justice because of the language of the court, of the appellate court in Dominguez's case, and because of the language in the district court in an earlier opinion, in the May 2002 opinion. But that's argument. And it's argument that perhaps supports a sufficiency of the evidence claim, but petitioner still fails to come forward with evidence showing that he was actually innocent of the crime. And as we know from Boozley versus United States and Calderon versus Thompson, that actual innocence means factual innocence and not legal insufficiency. Petitioner also fails to show that it's more likely than not that no reasonable juror would have found him guilty in light of the allegedly new evidence. The evidence at trial was overwhelming. There was an eyewitness, Ray Arroyo, who saw smoke coming from petitioner's gun on the first shot. He also testified that he saw two more shots, or that he heard two more shots from the same location, which did not sound any differently than the first gunshot from which he had seen the smoke. George Soria, store detective for the Department of Defense, saw sparks coming from petitioner's gun on the first shot and heard one to two more shots from the same location. He testified conclusively that there were no other shooters at the scene, and his credibility and reliability as a witness was proven when he helped identify petitioner through the license plate of his mother's vehicle. In his statement, petitioner said that no one in the group on the street had any guns. He also admitted to masterminding the plan to wreck his mother's car so that he could claim it was stolen when the murder happened. Even the co-defendant's statements refute actual innocence. Jose Dominguez and Dragan Jovanovic both stated that when petitioner retrieved the gun from under the hood of his vehicle, he uttered battle cries about wanting to shoot at the people on the street and make them pay for throwing the stones and bricks at his car. They also both stated that the people on the street did not have any guns. And Jovanovic added, the petitioner wanted to wreck the car because he believed he had killed someone and because someone may have seen the license plate to the car. Therefore, the evidence failed to satisfy petitioner's extremely high burden of showing actual innocence to excuse his procedural default and allow the court to review the merits of the claim. Even if the court were to review the merits of the claim, he still fails to satisfy Section 2254D1. The court must find that the state court's ruling was objectively unreasonable, even if it was wrong. And the state court analyzes claim under Strickland's two-prong test, finding that defense counsel's performance was not substandard, and that there was no prejudice to the petitioner in light of the overwhelming evidence of his guilt. That ruling was not contrary to or an unreasonable application of federal law. As a result, the district court's denial of the petition should be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kaplan. Mr. Johnson?
Not all of the one individual in a police statement in a police report stated that they fled the scene, possibly because someone thought we might have shot someone, but no one else said it, and the reason they fled the scene in everybody else's consistent statement is because they hit someone when they were taken off out of there. Mr. Arroyo, the counsel refers to, did not say that he saw Mr. Gomez shoot twice. Not a single person did. I will concede that in this situation, there are a lot of different people saying, well, I heard five bullets, well, I heard four, well, I hit the pavement. But this is what caused the appellate court to say there's no evidence, because you could not make heads or tails out of what was testified to as far as gunshots and where they came from. What Mr. Arroyo did say is, I saw a big chrome gun, and lo and behold, that's what was recovered from Mr. Gomez's house. This whole case, with regard to the timing of the statements, they're not unreliable. They were given within hours of the shooting. All these guys gave their statement within an hour of the shooting, and they tried to dig Gomez's grave. And I'm not saying that's bad. I mean, I would try to save myself, too. But they said he had a battle cry. He was mad. He wanted revenge. He told us to go. We got the gun. We came back, and he shot. We agree with all that. Gomez shot. But what we now know is that he shot a different gun and didn't harm anybody. I see my time is up.
Just as a point of inquiry, Ms. Johnson, were you involved in any of the state court proceedings?
I was not, Your Honor.
Do you know on the second appeal, that is Mr. Gomez's appeal, whether the first case was brought to the... I mean, what was in the petition for rehearing? Did you examine that?
I was not involved until this court. I was not even involved in the district court level.
No, I just meant as a matter of research whether the second opinion, first opinion was brought to the attention of the panel after it issued the second opinion.
I did examine it. It's my understanding no action was taken.
By counsel for Gomez?
Gomez. After the Dominguez opinion was handed down.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, all counsel. Case is taken under advisement.